The audience's imagination is your collaborator.
Hello, and welcome to episode 47 of Untamed Shrews, Women Talk Theater, presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Dawn. Today we will be joined by our friend Matthew Windham, a local playwright, actor, director, and private chef. Matthew has been working with Flag Shakes for several years, both on and off stage, and we are so excited to chat with him.
But first, shrew check-in time. How are you, shrews?
Woo! We've been skipping check-ins for the last few times, so I feel like we're very behind on a check-in.
So
True.
much, so much going on.
So much.
I mean, the obvious big one pertains to both Becky and I.
Yes.
Yes, very true.
Becky is back on staff at Flag
Woo!
Festival, and not just back on staff.
As the executive director.
Woo!
Yay. And that is
Yay!
because Dawn has transitioned.
I am now the director of Vision and Impact at Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. So essentially, I am now doing full-time development work. Everyone reacts so funny when I say this, but it's all I've ever wanted to do. I'm so excited to finally be in this position. It has been so amazing, and I know it's only going to get better because, of course, right now we're in transition, so there's still a lot of my time that's devoted to, some of that management work at Flag Shakes, which I'm so happy to be able to, provide guidance so that it's not a chaotic transition for you. But on the other hand, it's so nice to me every time I can turn down a production meeting and spend an hour with a donor. So that's really what I love doing and what I want to be doing for the company. So that has been just like amazing. And I'm really glad that it's Becky. And I think everyone's glad that it's Becky when I announced to the board that I, well, first of all, we got a really generous year after year donation that's making this possible for us to expand our staff in the way that we are. And so when I first announced to the board that I wanted to transition out, and that I thought we should hire internally for the executive director, which everyone agreed with, everyone's first choice was Becky.
Very
Travis's
sweet.
first choice was Becky. The board's first choice was Becky. My first choice was Becky. So everyone just thought, oh yeah, this is who we want to make a direct offer to. And there's a lot involved in that. And if anyone has questions about it, of course, we would be happy to answer. But you can obviously hire one of two ways. You can put the position out and accept applicants, or you can make a direct offer to someone. And just because Flag Shakes has some really big growth things that I cannot talk about on Untamed Shrews, positive, exciting growth things happening, we thought it would be best for our company to hire internally. And everyone was like, well, then it's got to be Becky. I think Justice said my favorite thing, which he said, well, if you're not the strong, confident woman I'm working for, I want it to be Becky.
Oh, that's very kind of him to say.
Strong,
Yeah.
confident. That's what he said. The strong,
Oh, okay.
confident woman I'm working for. And
Yeah,
like,
not confident.
you're
No,
both, you're all three, but
no,
he used the word confident.
no. Yeah, very sweet. Yeah, I've finished, I think it's my sixth end of my, we're at the end of my 5th week or 6th week. So it's definitely been like a change for me, a very exciting change. And I am just so excited to continue to work with and now to kind of like lead or guide this company. And yeah, see where we're headed. And I'm also very excited to just learn a lot in this role. Yeah, so thank you for
Yeah.
everything, Black Shakes.
There's so much to know about, nonprofit management, and it's so interesting because like, just helping you transition, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have spent 10 years on a learning curve I didn't realize I was on. And just the other day when you were like, well, where are the, grant requirements for this? And I was like, oh no, that's a foundation donation. Oh, let's talk about the difference between a grant donation and a foundation donation. It's not something that, I would have thought like, oh, people might not know this. But why would anyone know it unless they're receiving those kinds of gifts? So I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So yeah, it's great. And I'm so excited. And I guess, you know, the new rule is two shrews at a time on staff. I don't know.
I was saying we do just kind of do this weird shifty thing. One shrew leaves, the other shrew comes in. We just, as long as we have two out of three shrews actively on staff, Flagshakes will survive. That you should write that into the bylaws. Two of three shrews at all times.
So
Two of
anyway,
three shrews.
yeah, on a
Love
more
it.
personal note, you know, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of it because it's not about me, and I feel the, you know, there are a lot of decisions you have to make about how you talk about your children or how you like introduce your children to the world, especially in social media age. I don't have social media, so that's lovely. I don't have to worry about what am I posting or pictures or et cetera. But a lot of times I want to talk about my struggles as a mom, but sometimes those are my children's struggles. And so that's really hard. But I'll just say that, you know, our family is dealing with some, you know, medical stuff. It's like the best worst case scenario. Both of our children are happy and healthy and, you know, emotionally and mentally thriving, and no one's in any pain or experiencing any, you know, like things that are holding them back from just living their life to the fullest. So that's all great. But we are experiencing some, you know, medical stuff that has just been like a really a roller coaster for me. Wanting, of course, to always do whatever is best for my children and their health. And just feeling like right now there are so more questions than answers. And just like, you know, I love, 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 love Flagstaff, but I'm suddenly realizing something that I've heard from a lot of other people, like we are an island, and when you get into like the medical world and especially the world of medical specialists, suddenly, you know, you're having to travel 2.5 hours down to Phoenix, and you're having to, you know, put all this extra like financial and time strain on yourself and your family. So we're trying to make the best of it, like, you know, go to the museums while we're there and like go to the railroad park and, you know, those kinds of fun things while we're there. But that's just been. And of course, everyone knows the world of healthcare, not just healthcare, but
Insurance.
insurance is just, we have insurance that is really small insurance. And in one way, it's been delightful because, you know, when we call, someone answers. When we have a problem, someone cares. When we can't get something covered, our insurance actually reaches out to the doctor and, like, directly advocates for us rather than us having to advocate.
That's
But
huge.
also because they're so small, like, and we're in Flagstaff, absolutely no one is in network. So it's like, well, great. So this isn't in network, so we've got to do this and we've got to do that, you know, and so it's like the exact time when we don't want to be switching, you know, and our insurance did help us get our pediatrician covered with our insurance and that kind of thing. But at first it was really scary because it was like, well, we're just going through this big thing, and now our pediatrician might not be on our insurance. Like, we don't want to switch pediatricians because she's been the pediatrician for both our kids since they were born. And you want that, like, you know, long-term understanding of your kid. So yeah, so anyway, that's been kind of like personally the biggest thing for me that's been going on, I guess. We're
Big
here for
prayers
you.
for you babies.
Thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, you're welcome. Becky?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest check-in, of course, is what we talked about, my new role with Flagshakes. I celebrated my 35th birthday. The three of us went down to Phoenix for a little spa day.
Nice.
Yeah, the weather was gorgeous. It was sitting in a steam room. All
Heck
that humidity
yeah.
was so nice.
So many People magazines, personally.
So into those magazines.
My sister just had a baby. So that's my first like biological niece. Because of course I'm an auntie to Don's kiddos. Staying busy with theater and work and also insurance.
No, right.
So can't get around that, I guess. So yeah.
Awesome.
What about you, Hannah?
Well, I am a sick shrew today, guys. I'm sure you'll hear it throughout this episode. I sound a bit nasally than normal.
Yeah, I'm sick yet again, unfortunately. My husband and I have been through the ringer this winter. Something about this winter is just really getting us. He gets sick and then I avoid it, but then I get it and then he gets it from me, and then it just keeps coming and going and back and forthing. And yeah, and we've been so busy. I have been in an exorbitant amount of shows. I don't think I've been in this many shows in my whole life. Which is honestly probably why I'm sick, because I'm in so very many shows. But it's been awesome. Since I checked in last, let's see. Yeah, I am still writing and directing in narrative Ariel shows at the Ariel Studio. So end of last year, I did Nutcracker, and on top of that, I was also in Emma at Flag Shakes, and that was an absolute blast. Such a good show. Really had a good time with that. Also, I don't think I announced it on the podcast, but my one-woman show, Shakespeare's Sirens, went to Newfoundland in January because it got selected to be one of the shows at the Shakespeare Theatre Association conference, presented by Shakespeare by the Sea Newfoundland. So yeah, that was just an absolute dream come true. Got to take my show to Newfoundland. Jacob and I were there. We had such a blast. Played and listened to a lot of traditional music. Literally, currently, my husband is in the other room learning Newfoundland folk songs on the mandolin. And currently, I'm also in several shows again. I'm currently writing and directing again Alice in Wonderland at the Ariel Studio. And I'm also in a play here in town about Route 66 that we're in rehearsal for. Sirens is going up again in February at La Posada. And it's also, I'm so excited, Bridge Initiative picked it up down in Phoenix. So I'm doing it in March 10th at the Tempe Center for the Arts. I'm doing Shakespeare Sirens down in Phoenix, and it's the ink is not dry, but a company approached me in Newfoundland about doing the show that would take me internationally again. So yeah, gosh, except for the fact that I can't speak through my nose, things aren't good. And I'm probably gonna go take a nap after this, even though it's only 10 a.m.
Well, just to check out
yeah.
Route 66, because both Hannah and I are doing it, we're in the same cast. There's currently two casts. I think the first public show is February 8th. So get your tickets for that. Reach out to us if you want to see a show beyond that. We'll let you know if that's our cast.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, cool. So great to be shrewing again this January, and it's a new year, and it's been 5 years, guys. Happy 5 years.
Wow.
I think that's correct, hopefully.
Yes.
And this is episode 47, so look at us go.
Wow.
Okay, cool. Well, anything else for the good of the order?
For the good of the order. No, I think we're good. Don, do you
Great.
want to take us over to Matthew? Yeah.
All right, now let's jump into our conversation with Matthew Wyndham.
Hello.
Hey, Matthew. Thank
Hello.
you for being here.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. Matthew, will you tell the Shrew Crew who you are and how you're here today?
I've been working with Flag Shakes since 2021. I've been on stage quite a bit with Flag Shakes, and I was the co-writer of Simply Silly Shakespeare and Shakespeare on Pluto. Conceived of both of those plays and co-wrote them with AJ Meniglia, and also there was some stuff that was written by Essie Wyndham as well. And I wrote the adaptation of Emma, and yeah.
Yay! And tell us more about just you as a artist, actor, human.
I am a private chef, as you all know,
Yes.
which really is a development also since I moved to Flagstaff at the end of 2020. Before that, I did all sorts of things. I worked in a shop in Philadelphia that made crates for shipping and storing fine art for a few
Oh,
years. I
that's
was
good to
a
know.
resident actor and company member at Hedgerow Theater in Philly for a short period of time. Before that, I worked for a PBS television station in Utah for quite a while, as well as working a lot with one particular company in Utah that's now called Parker Theater that does a lot of theater for all ages, but especially like TYA stuff, which is where I got a lot of my training, both as an actor and as a developed my style and some of my skills as a writer. And they had a Shakespeare festival that I was a co-founder of, that was Shakespeare for young audiences, and we did truncated versions of Shakespeare's plays, and as well as some introduction to Shakespeare type shows that were devised and created with a group of actors, and I oversaw most of those productions.
It's funny because I've known you so long, and some of those were new ones to me. I did not know that you worked for PBS. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Only fakes. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, or yeah.
It was in this operations department of a PBS station,
Huh.
KUD, which is the main PBS station for the state of Utah. And really, I described my job there as glorified babysitting job because I would just make sure that everything was going out on air the way it was supposed to, that they had the napkins, that it looked, that the colors were correct, that it
Yeah.
was on air, important
You
stuff
were
like
just the
that.
last set of eyes. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
Totally. Nice.
yeah.
I mean, that's still, I feel, artistically fulfilling though, because you are a part of a larger production, which is super cool. Except that's just a different version of, yeah, I just never thought about. I mean, I know a lot of people always ask, like, Hannah, do you do film? Or whenever you say you're an actor, people ask about film or TV. And I'm like, I've never done almost anything. But it's good to have that stuff up under your belt. Absolutely.
I actually kind of came to theater doing more scenic construction in the first place. I worked for that theater before it was called Parker Theater. It was called Utah Children's Theater before that. It was called City Rep, but I worked for them for a number of years building sets. That was most of what I did for them before I started sort of creeping into the more artistic
Hence
side. So I would
the
say,
crates for fun.
yeah,
Yes.
exactly. Which is where I got the skills to be able to build crates for shipping and storing
That's
firewood.
crazy to me because you're such an incredible actor. I would have thought you've been acting your whole life. That is crazy. That's awesome.
I still remember actually when you first auditioned for Flag Shakes and Hannah was like, "Who is this handsome, talented Shakespeare actor and how do we get him on our stage?"
And I
Yeah, you
remember
could see
the
that
Philly
blushing, yeah.
connection.
Oh,
Because
yes,
I
the
was
Philly
from Philly.
connection.
Who is he?
It's
No,
true. I
I
know we've had a lot
hi.
of there are a lot of have been a lot of sort of intersections in our lives
Yeah.
that even though we didn't meet before Flagstaff, but
Totally. And I lived in Utah a long time too, so I remember when I saw Utah on your resume, I'm like, do I know him?
yeah.
Yeah, so funny.
So you kind of went through the transition from offstage, backstage to onstage, but
Yeah.
now you've transitioned again to, I mean, a lot, but to the work that happens before we get on stage. And so how did you decide you wanted to write plays and get into the playwriting aspect of theater?
I always wanted to be a writer, actually. So, I mean, I was doing all of these things sort of behind the scenes just as a way of making money and just because I had connections and not really specifically because I was interested in theater at the time, I would say. I always wanted to be a writer and I used to just go to a coffee shop for 8 hours a day, every day when I was in my 20s, and just write. I couldn't say that I have a lot to show for that as far as like things that I would share with anybody. I have a I wrote a lot of short stories, but I was finding my voice. I was finding out what I was interested in writing. And then I started getting back into or getting into the artistic side of theater, doing some acting and everything like that. And I was working for the Parker Theater, and they said, they were telling me about their upcoming season, and they had Ferdinand the Bull on the season, which is a children's book that I love. I love Ferdinand. It's a great book. It's about,
So cute.
a little pacifist bull who does not want to fight in the bullfighting ring. It's a
Yeah.
very, very sweet story.
It's very cute. They
And
turned
I
it
was
into
raised
a
on it.
kids' movie. Yeah.
And it but it's
Aww.
it's also a very short children's book.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, of course, yeah, I haven't actually I've never actually seen the film version of it, which I should at
It's
some
cute.
point. But
Yeah.
it's a very short children's book. It doesn't have there aren't there's not a lot more to the plot than what I just said. And but they decided that they were going to do that show on their season, and so I said, well, I'd be interested in writing the adaptation of that, just because I had been a writer, not a published writer, not a very successful writer at that point in time, but somebody who liked to write a lot. And so they gave me the opportunity to write the adaptation of Ferdinand the Bull, and then as we were trying to figure out who what the artistic staff for the show would be, the theater offered me the opportunity to direct it, which I originally tried to turn down a couple of times and like tried to find some other directors for it. But in the end, I ended up acting in it, directing it, and
Oh
writing
no.
it,
Oh
which
no.
I
Did
don't
you also build
recommend.
the set? Do the
Yeah, generally speaking, I don't recommend. I've directed myself several times, and it's something. This is going a little off topic, I guess, but yeah, I've directed myself several times, and it's something that you always like the your own performance is the last thing you want to th you think about. Last, not just the last thing you want to think about, but truly the last thing you think about before you walk on stage in front of an audience. So
For
it's not
sure.
great. Anyway, so I wrote that adaptation of Ferdinand the Bull, and then started. That just got the ball rolling. I started writing other productions for them. Wrote something that a play about the Wright brothers. Wrote a play about the Race to the Moon. Probably some others that I wrote like an adaptation of Winnie the Pooh, which was really fun. Essie played Piglet in it, and I was Tigger.
Oh,
It was great.
cute.
Anyway, yeah, had a lot of fun doing that kind of writing, and then after that, moved to Philadelphia to do work in the theater there, and started getting connected with theaters in the area. And then I just started asking, "Do you need a writer for this project that you have on your slate?" And yeah, now I would say I don't have an exact number, but I've probably written about 20 plays that have been produced
Wow.
since. I don't know, that in the
Wow.
last 12 or 14 years, maybe.
That's amazing. And they all range from, well, Emma, I know, was a two act, so, but I'm assuming maybe like Ferdinand the Bull was maybe like a 45, 50 minute or.
That one was it was like a main stage production for that theater. So it was probably I can't remember exactly, but I'm guessing like 70 minutes, and I do believe it had an intermission, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
You really had to.
Nice.
Really had to
Which is a
beef up
lot.
the material. You took a lot of liberties there.
Yeah, there was this whole flamenco tangent in it because, of course, it takes place in Spain.
So, how do you feel that, or has your process changed from the first show that you've written to now? If it has changed, maybe it hasn't. Or what is your process?
What is your process?
Well, I guess something that I discovered about writing, and this, I think this in particular started to happen when I was creating these sort of intro to Shakespeare shows for the Parker Theater's Children's Shakespeare Festival, was how much I like writing with other people and how much they enhance the quality of the script of the material, and like help come up with better jokes, and like help just tighten up the overall story and the ideas and everything. The way that they're functioning help round out characters a little bit better. So yeah, I think that is definitely something that has changed a little bit for me over time. I realized that I did not like writing by myself that much, because it's kind of a lonely thing, but I love theater because it's collaborative art making and story creation, storytelling. And so when you're and a group of a hive mind of brilliant theater artists can really make something amazing that I on my own am don't would not have made, you know?
Wait, I have questions about this because I agree similarly. Do you literally mean co-writing, or do you mean writing and then showing and then getting feedback? Because,
I don't think I've talked about it much on the pod, actually, but Shakespeare's Sirens just went to Newfoundland.
Cool.
And for this, which I guess I'll talk about in the check-in, because I'm not sure I actually have really announced it. I had kind of done that show just basically on my own. But for this particular run of the show, it was such a big moment for me that, we hired Jim Warren to direct. And so a big part of what I wanted his help on was just looking at the show. And he gave me such incredible suggestions. And, he just looked at the show as a whole, and he didn't copy edit in such finite detail that he was like, change this word. But he had such good ideas for ways things could change. And I just really appreciated that. And sometimes it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear that maybe your script isn't perfect, which of course we all know our scripts aren't perfect, but sometimes it's hard to hear like, oh, maybe this could be stronger. But I think this is really, I'd love to tangent on this. I think it's so important to find people you trust and love to know that they'll tell you with kindness where they think your art can improve. And you have to trust them enough to know that they're not just, saying this because they want to have power over your project, but instead to make your project better. So, when you say co-write, what do you mean? Do you mean like the copy edit process? Do you mean literally like having a co-writer? Where does it fall on the spectrum for you?
Yeah, I've done I well, at the very least, I always try to do like a workshop reading or something like that, where I can sort of hear I can hear the characters' voices out loud, and I can get some feedback from somebody if it's like the artistic director. Don had some really useful comments after we did a read through of Emma. We did a read through back in the summer, which I think maybe all of you were at. And then Don sent me some comments, and I got some comments from the director, James Canfield, about some things that I could do to tighten up the script a little bit. And those were all very, very useful. So at the very least, I always do that. But I do really love collaborative writing as well. So Simply Silly Shakespeare, AJ Maniglia, and I just met 1 to 2 times a week for maybe a couple of months, and I would write a bunch of things and then come back, and AJ and I would kind of workshop them together, and then I would go back and revise them and everything. And AJ would sometimes come in with like a few pages of material or something like that, and then we would just kind of bring them together.
Smush them together.
Yeah. And I've
I've
done quite a
never
bit
done
of that.
that.
What's
Nice.
that?
Nice job. Said I've never done something quite like that, where it's like truly like combining two brains.
Yeah, it's fun. You obviously have to find the right
Yes,
collaborators,
absolutely.
and the right moment, the right kind of script that works great for you, for the two of you. Vicky Thompson and I, wrote a play all about parasitic organisms, and that was
Yes.
something because I wanted to work with Vicky. I approached her and I
You're
said,
like,
"Can we create
what
something
play do you
together?"
want
And we
to
sat down and had a conversation, and she said, she started listing things that she was interested in, and then parasites came up, and I was like, that's
That's
the
the one.
one. And
She
then we
loves
spent 6 months
parasites
meeting and
so
talking
much.
about the life cycles of parasitic organisms and turning it into a play.
So funny. I love it. So, can we talk a bit more with Becky's question? I want to get a bit more nitty-gritty. What is your actual writing process like?
Yeah, so for with Emma, I pretty much just copy pasted the entire book into a Google Doc and started flashing out text. That was the easiest way for that particular book adaptation for me, the sort of fastest way of getting into the text. She writes a lot of her dialogue not actually in quotation marks, or that it kind of happens in sort of the body of the text, where a character is thinking about something that somebody said, or the narrator is like relating something that somebody said, but not saying it as a
Out loud.
quotation. So a lot of that stuff you have to just start sort of extracting to try to find, because a lot of the gems of Jane Austen's writing and the dialogue are actually in that text body. in the narration, I guess. So yeah, that's kind of how I approached that one. And then in the end, you end up, I always with an adaptation really like keeping as much of the original writer's voice in the adaptation as possible. That's something I really set out to do. It's because the whole reason I wanted to do Jane Austen's Emma in the first place is because I really, really like that book. And I like her as a stylist and as a humorist and as a humanist. I like there are so many things qualities about her writing that I like. And so I wanted to keep as much of that as possible in the play. But at a certain point, you always start to discover that you have to make the play your own to some extent. Otherwise it's just not going to work very well. Or otherwise it's just an abridgment of the book or something like that, and it's not going to work as well on stage. So then you start, so for me anyway, then I start writing my own material, trying to like hear her voice a little bit in the way that I write it, or just, sort of follow my own ideas about what's funny and what's interesting and everything. So for that particular book, that's really how I did the adaptation. For something right like writing a story or a play about the Wright brothers, I did get stacks and stacks of books, everything that I could find that was about their story. Because they are actually kind of difficult characters to put on stage because they were both like this is the description from everybody who knew them from their time. They were both kind of quiet and stoic and hard to read. And then those were like the main characters in a play. That doesn't necessarily work
Translate,
exceedingly well. So I was looking for every little nugget that was like, what is something that shows some of the individual character of each of these guys, so that is something that I can like really, put on stage for the audience to be able to understand, how their brains work and who they are kind of deep down. And then eventually I invented some stuff and took some stuff from my own life and from my childhood, and sort of was like, well, people in all ages from all backgrounds have, their way of behaving around their family members that's different from what the public sees. And so that ended up re being really helpful, having that realization. So yeah, those are two examples, I guess.
Okay, nice. I'm currently writing a script for Alice in Wonderland. And I find, similarly to what you said about Jane Austen, normally I take more of a like synthesis approach of like I take in like I wrote a script for The Nutcracker, but that book is so dense, the original actual Nutcracker book, that I did not take the actual text from the book. And instead, I just synthesized the story and then wrote it. But with Alice in Wonderland, the text is so accessible and it's extremely silly and fun and very sarcastic. And so I was like, well, I do need to do more of that approach. So I'm actually, as I write, have the book open next to me, and I am selecting actual lines and using them in my own way, which is not something I've really done before. I've usually been more of a synthesizer if I use a story that already exists. But now that I've done it this way, I'm kind of interested in maybe trying more literal adaptations, and taking texts and trying to use them a bit more. But I've been really loving Alice in Wonderland for that reason, because, Lewis Carroll did such a good job in the first place. I don't need to reinvent the wheel. He already gave Alice such interesting lines and created such weird characters with such iconic taglines and stuff. I don't need to, change them. So yeah, totally. What I always like to say, though, and let me know if this applies to you, and I think this applies to all art. I tell this to my aerialists as well. I just say, make it exist first,
and make it good second. So like it just needs to be there first. Like you just need to put the choreography on the hoop. You just need to put the words down. It does not need to be good. Just get it out there and then we can tweak it and make it better. I think a lot of people like I get a lot of imposter syndrome about playwriting because I've only dabbled and I've never like published a play. But I feel like I just have to get it out there. And as soon as I write it down, I'm like, oh, that super worked, or no, that did not work. But it exists, it's there. I have something to work with. So do you feel like you identify with that?
I think everybody needs a different process, but I do think I agree with you. It's important to just get something on the page because so many people, I think, get in their own way by thinking, I still need to process this a little bit longer before I start to write it. And some of the processing happens when you're writing it, and some of the processing happens when you're writing the fifth draft of it, you know, like you keep discovering. And actually, I was thinking about Dawn's play, A Life and Two Murders, because I got to see the very first draft of that play, and it's wildly different now. But I don't know, Don, when you first wrote it, what you wrote was kind of like what you had conceived in your head, right? What you
Well,
wrote down on the page.
what I first wrote was like mostly like I was so attached to the trial transcripts that it's based on, and I was trying to keep every single little detail, and every single little detail was precious. And right now, I just gave someone, I'm working with someone who's a fan of Flag Shakes, and she's working on a play, and she's come to me and asked me if I would, help her revise it. And at first I had the imposter syndrome Hannah is talking about, but then I realized, you've seen and worked on enough theater that you know what's a good script and what doesn't work in a script and how to help hone this. I just gave her the piece of advice that you gave me that most shaped A Life and Two Murders, where you said, copy and paste everything into a brand new draft so that you can just close the old draft and you know it's there.
Yes,
Now
absolutely.
be brutal. And that's what I did. And I think you said at the time, like, I do this a lot and I almost never go back to anything in the draft that I was so attached to. I almost always just go, oh, okay, this is actually. And that's how it was for me. And that's what I've encouraged her this time, because we did a round of edits and she did a great job, but she did not hone it in enough. It was like, this still needs to lose 20 pages. Like, we gotta get it. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give her that advice that Matthew gave me of, sort of, and people have different ways of saying this. There's the horrible kill your baby saying, which I hate hearing. But
Awful.
but
Let's
I know,
not.
right? In raising children, I realize how much violent and murderous language there is in our world that's just used so casually. And
Oh, for sure.
I'm not going to say it that way.
No.
So there's that horrible language, but it's meant to convey that same idea, right? Which is, and I think it's also what you're talking about, Hannah. It's just like, just get the draft out there. And whether that's just because you need to get over yourself and get something on paper, or you need to say everything you think you need to say and then rein it in because you don't actually need to say all of that. Like I think are kind of the two different ways to
Well,
go about it.
and there's that saying, like, don't let perfection get in the way of starting or get in the way of
Get in
progress.
the oh, Sean says this to me all the time. He says, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. That's what how he says it to me, but I think there might be a different version with perfection, Becky. But I do love that. Yeah, don't
For
let the
sure.
perfect get in the way of the good.
So when I was starting, because I wrote kind of that one woman show about autobiographical about my life, or whatnot, and I also felt like I was like, I don't know how to start this, like I can't start, it needs to be perfect, blah blah blah. And then I just titled my first draft "Shitty First Draft," and I was like, hey, yeah, this is the shitty first draft, and then now I can like craft
Just put it, yeah, just write it down and it'll be better next time.
I had an acting teacher who would always say the first time we did a monologue, she'd say, all right, this one's for the dogs. And then
Oh.
it was so much easier because you would just be like, oh
Totally.
yeah, this one's for the dogs. Like, I'm not
That's
going to accomplish
great.
anything in this. I'm just going to
And
do.
that's actually so nice to hear because, as a leader or, that's actually something, I mean, I might not phrase it that way, but I really love that. I might tell that to my aerialist. Be like, this is first draft. Throw it out there. This is not meant to be the good one. Like, just Right. get it on out there. Totally fine. Let's just see what we're working with here, I also find it's interesting. I really love writing, but I hate writing. It's very funny. I put it off and put it off and put it off, but then I sit down and I'll enjoy myself so much and write for like 4 hours. But I will put it off and put it off and put it off, and then I'll sit down and write for 6 hours, and then I'll put it off for 2 weeks, and then it's so funny because I think I'm nervous about doing it because it sounds daunting and big and will it be good? And then I sit down and I really have a great time. So what I should do is I shouldn't do this feast or famine situation, and I should probably, make myself do 20 minutes a day or something like that, which I know Becky, you did something similar to, which I've never tried. I've never been quite so structured. I've always just kind of been like, it needs to get done, so I'm doing it.
Well,
But
so
I'm good under deadlines. I'm such a
that's
deadline gal.
yeah.
So if you give me a date it needs to be done, it will be
And that's also a
done.
great motivator. And I think, when Matthew and I were working, when we first met about my show, and I was like, I have this idea, something that Matthew said was like, all right, I need to set a deadline. And that's why we scheduled a public staged reading. I was like, well, then by God, it will be done.
It'll be ready.
And the like 30 minutes a day, Hannah, that was with the Dramatist Guild. They had like a playwriting challenge or like a book challenge, I guess, if you were working on a musical, where it was like, and this was a couple of years ago, but it was like every day for the month of April, you're committing to 20 or 30 minutes per day. And yeah, like that was great for me because I was like dragging my feet writing it. And I was like, oh, this thing is coming up. Okay, I can commit to that. Like,
And then once you get into it, you're like, this is great. I really enjoy this. This is cathartic, especially with an autobiographical play. I found it very nice to be able to put down my thoughts and feelings, even if they
100%.
weren't great ones. Just put them on down,
Get them out of my head
And
onto
yeah, so
paper.
like it can be very cathartic, but for some reason, I think the act of writing can be daunting for a lot of us. But then I love it once I do it. So it's just a weird situation, but
Matthew, are you more of a 30 minutes every day or like a sit down for 6 hours kind of person, kind of playwright?
I think probably more the latter. I definitely when I do sit down to write to work on a play, most of the time, unless I just had some brilliant idea that I have to dash off, most of the time I set aside a chunk of time to work on it. Although sometimes if you have a brilliant idea and you just need to dash it off or get it down really quickly, then that turns into 2 or 3 hours of writing, and hopefully you had enough spare time at that moment to be able to do
When
all of that,
inspiration
because
strikes.
sometimes that's when the best things come. But I agree. I actually think I don't believe that I've ever finished a play without, or finished a draft of a play without some kind of deadline. So that's actually a really useful thing to create for yourself, even if that's all you're doing is creating it for yourself. Just saying, I want to apply, or I want to submit this play to this competition, and the deadline for that is July 12th. So I am going to have a draft ready by July 5th, and then you won't have it ready until July 12th. But still, like, you gave yourself a deadline. I don't. Yeah, I think you have to, in order to prioritize it, because it is a lot of work to write a play, as you three all know. I mean, that's one of the things that I think that makes it daunting, that makes it hard to tackle it, is knowing this is going to take a lot and to accomplish this. So anyway.
Speaking of submissions and deadlines, I think this is a good time to point out that Flagshakes just agreed to be the fiscal sponsor for the Northern Arizona Playwright Showcase. So I'm really excited about that. And it just kind of is happenstance that we scheduled this episode. And then at the last board meeting, the the president of the board for Northern Arizona Playwriting Showcase, who's also on our board, brought this opportunity to us.
Cool.
And I can remember watching those plays when I first came to Flagstaff. It's just a 10-minute play showcase. And so you can go and you can watch like 4 or 5 10-minute plays in an evening. And they're staged reading, so it's really simple and it just really helps highlight, the playwright's voice and the language and the story that they're telling. But anyway, yeah, we just decided to do that this past Sunday or something.
Nice.
Yeah, like the
Yeah,
past
just a
week.
few days ago. So that's really cool. And I only just realized how well that ties into this conversation. But I think there are always all these different, you probably know more about it than I do, Matthew, because you've sent me a couple, but there are always all these different opportunities to be submitting plays to Everywhere,
playwright.
yeah.
Yeah, there's one in Phoenix. There's the Phoenix New Playwright Festival, but I think that's different because isn't that the one, like the New Works Festival in Phoenix? Like, you have to write the show in 24 hours or
That is
in like.
one part of their, they do
Okay.
like a whole like month's worth of new work stuff. And
Okay.
one of them, yes, is the 24-hour playfest where
Oh,
the
that's what it is.
playwright
Yeah.
gets the like theme, first line, and, or not theme, setting, first line,
Oh,
and then
really?
like something else, like that night has to write it. But yes, they also do like other aspects of new works within that. Yeah.
So if you had suggestions like that, Matthew, like how do people find ways to, look for where should they be submitting, who might be interested in their work? I know there's the, kind of the way that you took, which I loved with Shakespeare and Pluto and Simply Silly before it was just to come straight to the theater company and say, "Hey, I've got this play idea and I really think it suits your mission and I really think that the community you're performing in could benefit from it." And then, Flagshake said, "Absolutely, you're so right. This play is for us." And so then developing it that way, but what are some other ways that you could tell playwrights how can they get their play produced?
I have never had a play that I submitted anywhere get produced. I have submitted to a couple of those things. You can Google different opportunities. I would definitely do that if you're interested in just finding submission opportunities for your plays. But I think approaching a theater to find out what they actually are looking for to put on their season is that's how all of the plays that I've written have gotten produced, is finding out what the theater is looking for. And I think that that actually teaches you a lot about what kind of plays theaters in general are looking to produce, because a lot of people want to write plays that have casts that are too big and too many locations and just like a lot of different expenses, that most theaters are looking for five or fewer actors on stage and one to two locations for a play. And that is like, that's pretty categorically what theaters that aren't Broadway are looking for. But
Agreed.
so you can submit your plays a lot to all of those different submission opportunities, but it's a good idea to get an idea, get a real handle on what theaters want and what they're likely to put on their stages. And obviously, if I were just to sort of like cold call almost any theater, they would probably I want to write a play or an adaptation or something like that for something that's coming up on your season, and they hadn't had any relationship with me whatsoever. Most of them are probably not going to respond. So you have to build a relationship with the theater and then. And then ask for the opportunities. I think that is the best way to go. Other than, I highly recommend self-producing, because if you're really passionate about creating something, this is something I think that all of you have done as well, is just like if you are really passionate about making a piece of theater on stage, then figure out the way that you can self-produce it. And maybe that's a solo show, maybe it's a two or three person show, maybe you're like looking for an opportunity, like both the Parasite play that Vicky and I wrote and the my solo show about the science of flavor were produced for the Flagstaff Festival of Science. Becky, was your show part of
Oh, yeah.
this
Yep. So,
Flagstaff Festival of Science as well?
yep. The first was with the Flagstaff Foundry or Art X through the Flagstaff
Oh,
Foundry.
right.
So Art X, the like arts and science festival, art, science and ideas festival here in Flagstaff. And then yes, a couple months later, I did it for the Flagstaff Festival of Science as well.
Yeah, so self-produce and look for local opportunities to just like put the thing that you're creating on stage, and then that'll help you develop relationships, and then you'll find more opportunities. That's definitely the way I would go about it.
Yeah, I think I just want to piggyback on that and just say, just ask.
Yeah, it doesn't
I
hurt to ask.
feel like, I mean, every time I've taken one of my shows somewhere or et cetera, I've just asked. I sent emails to friends who work at other companies or are leaders at other companies. And of course, I'm never expecting anything. And oftentimes they do tell me no. But I just say, hey, would you have a need for my one person show? And sometimes they say yes. And then that's great. And then sometimes they say no, or they'll think about it and, whatever. But I've never, yeah, it's very rare that you just get picked from a crowd. But if you just work with who you know, I mean, it's that age-old saying, it's all about who you know. But if you just, look at your network and ask around, and I mean, especially us as theater artists, we've all worked with so many people and we've gotten to know so many people over the years that just ask. The worst they'll say is no. I learned that from Becky. The worst they'll say is no. Like just with simple stuff, they'll tell you no if it's not a no, if it's not a yes, and then if it's a yes, great, it's a yes. That's awesome.
And I think even if you like volunteer as an usher for that theater, the theater will start to get to know you. And then that is enough of an in that when you ask the question, they're so much more likely to say, yeah, let's see what you've got. Let's
Totally.
take a look.
So something that we are getting ready to announce, Flag Shakes, is we have upcoming playwriting workshops with both Matthew and Hannah. They are both leading two separate workshops for playwrights. They will be free, these workshops, and they are in conjunction. We received an NEA grant to produce the play To Be Young, Gifted, and Black by Lorraine Hansberry, adapted by Robert Neiman. And also, in conjunction with that, are playwriting workshops with both Matthew and Hannah.
Woo!
I just want to plug that those ones are the playwriting workshops are actually underwritten by the Arizona Commission on the Humanities. So they're the ones. So we have an NEA grant to actually produce the show, and we have an Arizona Commission on the Humanities grant to produce sort of like a traveling display about Lorraine Hansberry, her life, her work that's gonna move around with the show, which we're producing with. We have so many collaborations on this one with Black Theater Troupe in Phoenix. And then Arizona Commission on the Humanities came alongside to fund some talkbacks about the show, that traveling display about the show, and these playwriting workshops for local playwrights or even people who want to travel into Flagstaff since they're free to come in and learn how to write their own plays or tell their own stories through the medium of theater.
Yeah, I guess I'll go first. So mine are 2 days. I wanted to split them up so people had some time to work on whatever we're working on. Both Mondays on March 16th and March 23rd of this year, so 2026, from 5:30 to 6:30. And what I want to focus on with mine, just based off of my main expertise, is writing solo shows and or autobiographical shows. And if people are interested, the cabaret style. So if you are a singer, incorporating that. But essentially just how you can take your own story and connect with others. Or what I also like most is I love taking, like, again, cabaret style or similar to Sirens, taking works that already exist and presenting them, but creating a play around them. So presenting songs or speeches and adding your own patter around them. So either your own perspective or playing a different character altogether, but essentially focusing on that solo show shape, especially because I think that these solo shows are just so good for actors to have, especially if you're not getting the work you want to get, or it just makes you more sellable as an actor. So that's what my workshop is going to focus on. I should probably come up with a catchy name, so some sort of catchy name about that.
Any shrews have any ideas? Just
Yeah,
answer.
let me know.
And I'm doing a workshop on the on March 10th at 6 p.m. I believe it's at the Beaver Street Theater.
Yes.
And Becky, you can correct me, but I think that my topic is adaptations. Or maybe I still have the opportunity to choose a different topic if I would prefer. But I think that's a good
Absolutely.
place to start because I've done a lot of that and I have a lot to say about it. And everything can be seen through that lens, I think.
Yeah. So we look
Awesome.
forward to listeners. We look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
you can see works by both of these playwrights in the Flag Shakes 2026 season. So Hannah's got Shakespeare's Sirens at La Posada, which is always a favorite event because Turquoise Room does the food. We perform in their gorgeous ballroom. You'll get to watch Shakespeare. I almost called you Shakespeare, Hannah.
Well, thanks.
Her husband.
He's also quite amazing, but yes, not quite. I'm not married to Shakespeare.
You'll get to watch Hannah and her husband Jacob perform Shakespeare's Sirens there, and then Matthew is doing the play with the most exciting title ever announced, Much Ado About Dinosaurs, which will be in our spring slot for the 2026 season. So
Woohoo!
fall slot
Oh,
for the 2026 season. I think that's
nice.
October.
Sounds
Yeah.
right.
That one's
We're
in October.
also alluding to a spring or late spring summer production written by Matthew as well.
Oh.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
we've been working on, and I'm also so jazzed about this. We've been working on our theater for young audiences, but Matthew has done some amazing, again, relationship cultivating and relationship building and network building. That last year we launched our first what we weren't calling at the time, but are now calling Theater for Aging Audiences. Because it's now going to actually be specifically written for aging audiences. Tour. Last year, we toured just a show that we already had in production that was already written, complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised again. And this year, Matthew's writing a play. So, just like our Theater for Young Audiences, TYA, that's written for young audiences, we're writing a show, TAA, Theater for Aging Audiences, and taking it to them in senior centers and senior living communities. So, we've got more than one opportunity to see shows by Matthew this year.
Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much
Cool.
for your time, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
How can people find you or hire you or read your plays, etc., if they'd like to?
I have a website for my private chef business. It's chefwyndham.com. Wyndham is spelled with an I. Chefwyndham.com. You can find me there. And you can always email me from or use the contact form on that website to contact me about anything theater related if you want to. That's probably the easiest way to find me. It also links to my Instagram, which is another way to find me. I think it's also Chef Wyndham, at Chef Wyndham.
I think it is. Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you, Matthew. That was lovely. I hope that this inspires people to go write a play or read a play or see a play. That
you,
would be super awesome. Okay, any last final thoughts about playwriting before we take it on over?
I have something really quick. I think
Yes.
something that I notice a lot of people try to do is write a film when they're
Oh.
writing their first play. Write a play. Write something that is interested in the way that theater works and the particular things that make theater different from film. And if you want to write a film, make a film. If you want to write a play, make a play. It's a, those
Oh,
are they're very, very different things.
totally.
The audience's imagination is your collaborator as a when you're doing theater, and just remember that whenever you're writing a play.
Yeah, and if you don't
Nice.
know what a play looks like, go see some
Yeah,
and
go see
then
a play.
I could not agree more with you, Matthew. That's the other thing that where I'm helping this woman edit her show. She definitely wrote a movie to start. I was like, no. And she's passionate about theater, so I know she wants to write a play. And so then if you're confused about Well, because all of us have seen more shows, film, etc., than we have theater, even if we're theater producers like myself. So if that's what you've seen, but you're what doesn't make it different, then go experience a lot of different levels of theater. Go to your regional theater, go to your community theater, really try to see what is it, that's wonderful on stage so that you can do that. But that's great advice.
Okay, yay. Thank you, Matthew.
So much, Matthew. And thanks
Thank
for
you.
listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Hannah. Join us for our next episode in March. Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flagshakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, and buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew.
This episode of Untamed Shrews, starring Hannah Johnson, Dawn Tucker, Becky Zaritsky, and Matthew Windham. Show art by Calliope Lou Decker. Podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb. Podcast produced and edited by Hannah Johnson and presented by Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.